quick, friend, open up your heart and let me in. Let me in, I'm being chased. Oh, no, I'm kidding you. I don't want you to be scared. Nobody's chasing me. Oh, no. I just want to have access to your heart. I want to crawl inside there and be a benevolent heartworm. You know, they have earworms. If you hear a song you like and you can't stop thinking about it in a psychotic sort of way, I'd like to be that way with kindness. I'm a worm who longs to curl up in your heart. Oh, it's so cozy in there. I will not stop it from beating. I will not grow so large that you can't use your heart for what it was intended. I just want to sit in there in the rhythm of it. It puts me to sleep, so mainly I'll be napping. I just want access to your heart to catch some Z's, your little heartworm. Hello, friend. And sometimes I'll speak to you like a conscience, but it'd really just be if I'm hungry for something. Do the right thing and eat a donut. That's what I'll say, but just because I want to taste some. Is that bad? I think that's wrong. Also, it's wrong about the anatomy. I do not believe that the food, though it passes by your heart, you can't get there from here. I think that's the thing. The food goes down this avenue and it says, I can see the heart from where I am. It's so close, but I can't get to it. And it just, you have to keep going and then dissolve in the stomach and everything, go into the blood, get to the heart that way. And they tried to say, I'm going to have a bypass. The original bypass was there was a little route from your throat directly into your heart. Kill you dead. It will, because you eat a lamb chop or something, and it goes into your heart, and there's not much room. And so you have to, now, that's why your symbolic heart can hold as much as your bladder. Do you ever express your bladder, and you think, how could that possibly, how could I hold all that? How large is my bladder, anyway? This is absolutely patently absurd that I had this. Is it the size of it? It feels maybe it's the size of a hefty bag. A large one, but look, I'm a limited creature. Now, your heart's not like that. Can only hold so much. Only so much within oneself. What's your capacity for love? I might be full, because I'm thinking now, oh gosh, if I love too many people, because most of it's made up of people. If you have a limited amount of love, I'd say, I'm going to go 90% people, 10% foods and objects, and then maybe 1% television shows or something. I don't know. I'm glad I don't have to ration my love. You used to say, hey, is that, is that affection really necessary? They would say during the war. We need your love for the love bomb. So you can't use it anymore to make other things. And the government would take it. And it melted all the love down. And I don't know where that story's going. You know, when you lie, that's the thing between the truth and a lie. Sometimes a lie takes a little bit of energy. Because you have to think, oh gosh, what happened? The best thing is the misremembered truth. The best kind of story is someone telling something, they're convinced it's true. And there's an unlimited amount of detail. Because the confidence, you fill things in. You know, if you really start to go, I don't even know what I know. And now I'm thinking a lot of my perceptions. They might be misleading. Oh, I walk through the whole world like that, like I have blinders on. And there's others who think, I'm a machine. I process everything. I can tell you things like they were a movie, like I'm watching a movie. And then it comes out with all of the truth and logic of a movie and all of the reality of a movie. Oh, if you want to create your own reality, that's fantastic, because I have a crafting class where we make our own reality. Just bring it, it's just the same gluing stuff. We're basically just gluing stuff, dried food, the equivalent of dried food. We're painting it colors it shouldn't be. And we're gluing it in places that you wouldn't think you'd want it. And then we're assigning a meaning to it. For instance, I used to do this with macaroni, gold paint, and a paper plate. So, kids, if you've got glue, macaroni, gold paint, paper plate, maybe some glitter, and gunpowder, listen, write this down. We would take the plate, and we would glue macaroni to it. Do you follow me? So it's like you got a plate at a smorgasbord. You're at a company or a school smorgasbord. You receive a paper plate, and on that you put your macaroni that you get, and you're thinking, I hope there's cheese or some other sauce or red sauce. But you spread your macaroni evenly, so there's one piece of macaroni, or macaronis, excuse me, on each, you see, a single layer. And that you sort of glue it like that, so you spread the glue down. We would use a brush or our hand or our face to spread the glue over the plate, then put the dried macaroni, not already cooked. That's a mistake a lot of people make. Say, do I need to cook the noodles before I glue them to the plate? No, don't. They'll fall apart. Dried macaroni, use that. I won't explain why. It's very complicated. Then when you're done, take some gold spray paint. There's different kinds of gold spray paint. I prefer the kind that has actual gold in it and will turn items to solid gold when you touch it. This is the kind that Midas, called Midas brand or something like that. And it's magical. And what I do is I spray a little on a person or an animal I don't care about, and it makes it solid gold, and then I'll sell that. But then I use it on the macaroni. And so then I have a gold plate of macaroni like that. And then I say, hey, then I have to assign meaning to it. And I'll say, this is an award for somebody who works at like a pasta bar. Say, we're giving you the golden plate of macaroni as an award. Now, another version you can do is once you've got this, if you've got time, something you could do is do layers of macaroni. So at the end, you've got like a pile. So it's very realistic. Or spray along with the gold. Hey, spray yellow or red sauce, but have it be fluorescent paint that'll fluoresce under black light. So that way, you can say, hey, come on over. I have a great idea. I'm going to present you an award. I'm going to slip you some hallucinogen, give you an award, and it's a plate of, I made it. I don't want to spoil it and tell you what it is. I like doing that for friends, because sometimes what we need is just an item, an object to focus on, something, maybe even someone's voice, to take us to another world. It is possible to escape this world and to go to other possible ones. I know this, because I've woken up in other worlds. You go to bed, you wake up the next day, you go, something is just not quite the same. And it isn't. And you don't know what it is, and you never will. Is that another possible world? I don't know. But I do know this, that a lot of what we think is reality is our perception. And maybe if we all changed it once and self-deluded, we're all delusion. Let's all participate in a benign, benevolent, coordinated delusion where we all agree to at the same time to think something entirely different and see if that'll jumpstart a new reality. You know, if everybody jumped up at the same time, say everybody jump off the earth at the same time, who knows what would happen? But I do nothing. But thinking the same thing at the same time, we've never tried that, and it'll never happen. But will it or won't it? We don't know. Think about it. The thing is that sometimes the best thing to do is to disorient yourself before you reorient yourself. You should always spin in a circle. Every children know this. Say, I'm going to make myself dizzy. I'm going to spin around so many times that I throw up, I forget where I am, and I'm going to start all over again. They know that. And they can do that because they just started. A child comes into this world, a tabula rasa, an empty computer. And we start giving it things, and it rejects it. And then it says, well, at some point I need to accumulate things. And there's only so many times to reinvent yourself. And then you get our age, and you have passed the age of personhood into caricature. And now you are a meta person. You are a person about a person. And you're wed to all your memories seem like they're truth. And you don't question or reinvent anymore. You don't say, I might be a space pirate, or I might be from another dimension or something. Or you don't think about that anymore. So, well, I can't be. All this that has accumulated must be proof of something. That's who I am. I've been this thing for so long. Oh, can you imagine being in a play? I was in a play where I was a sea captain named Mezamiah Shamsinson. I know it doesn't sound like I just made that up, Mezamiah Shamsinson. But I didn't. Mezamiah Shamsinson will be with me forever. Mezamiah Shamsinson. It's indelibly stamped in my memory because I had to be that character for decades. It started out as a job. I forget what the character's name was, but I was a captain on a ship, Mezamiah or something. And every day I'd have to do the same lines. And I'd remember performances, you know, maybe a little bit, but only if something was slightly different, then it would stand out. You know, that was the night where someone didn't hand me the lantern and I said, hand me forth the lantern that I may see upon the dark waves. I turn my face to the heavens. My face is a map of all eternity. My physiognomy a map of the stars. Let it guide you to the future. Look upon me and you will gaze upon a mirror of your own fate. Hand me the lantern. And the lantern didn't come. And he remembered that night. I'll never forget that night when the words I said made no sense, the captain said. So then you begin to think you're the captain because that's the part I played. This happens with TV characters. So I thought I was Gilligan. Said Bob Denver. No, he didn't think that. He went off and toured around the country doing Owl and the Pussycat with his wife. He said, I told a friend that. I said, Bob Denver and his wife drove around the country doing Al and Pussycat, and I used the expression, out of the trunk of their car. And they didn't know what I meant was they had all the props with them and all the stuff with them that they needed. They could do it, just hit a theater and do it. But my friend thought I meant that they were actually doing it in the trunk of their car. That you could tour the country and do dinner theater in and out of the trunk of your car. And do Owl and the Pussycat, maybe, or some other, I don't know, other play. One that didn't require more than a couple people. I'm doing that with Time and the Conways. And it's like 20. I got 20 people in the trunk of my car. So I had to get very tiny. But they're not really people. They're figurines. It's puppet theater. And it's in the trunk of my car. And we tour all around the country. We drive all around the country, but I can't get the guts up to stop and talk to people. I wish I could do that. I've done so many tours all around these United States, but I just don't have the gumption to interact with people, to stop and like say, oh, I should perform or meet people. So I stay in the car. I get out of the car to use the bathroom or go into the hotel or anything like that. And now people watch. I actually tour this country as an audience, I'm not following an act like people do with Fish or Roy Smick. What I do is, though I like to watch people, mainly on television. Sometimes I will go to a bar. And I will, instead of watching the people in the bar, I will watch the people on television. Because I like to people watch, but you don't want to stare at somebody who's there. What if they turn around? I see some videos of people sketching others on the subway. So I'm going to do this detailed sketch. And somehow the person never moves and never notices that you're staring intently. So I'm trying to get the shape of their chest right. Or something, and it was staring at you and drawing. I don't think there's such a thing as drawing. That's the conclusion I've drawn from that. Nope. No pun intended. What I do on the subway is just nothing. I don't want to make art. Or maybe I'm making art internally when I ride the subway. How often do you do that? Rarely. I don't live in a place that has a subway. Train, I don't ride anything. I don't go anywhere much. Sometimes I have to. I'm very old-fashioned that way, and that I forget that there's ways, there's transportation. Say, well, travel, that seems crazy. You don't have to, when I have history lessons, they go, imagine a time when people, you know, what an undertaking it was to go across the country. Still is for some of us. Yes, but it takes a fraction of the time. Does it? Because if you factor in worry, the time it takes me to fly to California is roughly equivalent of going there in a covered wagon if you include the weeks beforehand which I have runny diarrhea and anxiety and anticipation of getting there. Oh, yes, it might take longer and you might be attacked by the people whose land it actually is back in the day. But now, like, you don't know. It takes a few hours, but does it? You could be trapped on the... I just flew recently. And the time in the air is great. The problem is, like, when you land, there's a shortage of people to let you out now. So you sit there and you go, well, we're here. We got here early. That's good. But nobody's going to let us out. And they don't. And you sit there and they won't let you out. And they go, oh, this is interesting. I love this. I mean, it's just, I write it all down. I'm trying to make it into a formula. And I wonder how we could make things worse and the way we get around. I mean, I like going far-flung places. I wonder about my relationship to the journey. And I noticed that a lot of times in these stores in the airports, they do not sell any kind of literature that would help you cope with travel. And I mean in a spiritual way or putting it in a historic context. You don't have any access to books about how people used to travel or what it means to go somewhere or lots of that, you know, those newsstands should have a whole Taoist section and say, you know, it's the getting there. When you think about it, it's the airport's the fun part. I've actually had vacations like that where I've thought, man, I tell you, the shopping was better at the airport than when I finally got to Badambadil. It wasn't as good. But I found, I've done that going on trips. You know, when you promise people you buy them, I'll get you something when I go to this exotic place. And you go, gosh darn it, I forgot. So you're getting a shot glass that says Newark. But that's okay. And then once I had done that, I was stuck. And now I have some friends that I'm going on about 5 years. I get my friend Brian a shot glass, and it always is just from the whatever store I had access to at the last minute. I think, oh, dang it, I didn't get Brian anything. And I'll go and I'll run and I'll get a shot glass, and it'll say, you know, something. Bigfoot was the last one I got him when I went to Denver. Bigfoot is from Denver, I think, or it was Merkamendi's shot in Colorado, or I don't know, something like that. So I got him that, and also fridge magnets are a good way to say, I think about you inadvertently. And when I do, I try to seize the moment. I want credit for it. So I bought this to let you know that I thought about you super briefly, and that should add up. So put all of these on your refrigerator and you will see collectively how much I think about you over time. It's lots if you add it up. So you're not my most thoughtful friend. Over the long run I am. I unfold. I'm a four-dimensional friend. I'm a tesseract. You can't see what you can't see. I'm always going on. I'm a friend in a direction that you can't conceive of. Oh, yes, there are other dimensions that go out in all sorts of ways they shoot out from us. It could be back and forth and up and down, forward and backward in time, in and out of existence, all the dimensions. What am I? How many dimensions am I? I don't know. What do you mean? Like my suit size? I'm going to give out my suit size in case you're making a suit. And you think, maybe I made this the wrong size for myself, but it turns out Hardy's that size. So, you know, people have sent me clothes before. Listener friends. We set it up. Not unsolicited. What's this bag of laundry? It's from listener so-and-so. Thank you. That's fine, though. I'll take your... I'm always looking for... Do you fabric arts? Is that why, Hardy? Or for schmatas? Do you use them to... for your rag collection? Do you sell rags? Maybe. I have a cart. I go downtown near the food carts with my rag cart. I made it myself. It's old time. I've been taking it to Ren fairs. I go, rags! Like that, I'll do. This was fun. So the flight attendant, stop me if someone else has told this joke. The flight attendant's walking down the aisle with a bag. And they walk down and they look at each person. And they look at each person and they go, trash, trash, trash. And then she looked at me and went, you're okay. Trash, trash, like that. And I thought that was interesting. But judgy, you know, because I thought the other people seemed cool. They weren't doing anything. And I know I looked good. I looked really good, though. Because I dress up when I travel. And so I'm going to look sharp and clean. If you're sitting next to a person, I think that's an act of love to me. If there's a stranger sitting next to me, I don't want to be overly perfumed, but I put on something just a little subtle. So if they do smell something, at worst they go, ooh, somebody has a candle, like that. But they're not going to go, ooh, someone's cheese has gone bad. And then I want to, I don't want to be obnoxious in any way. I don't want to have too much of my, if my leg touches someone, I don't want it to be bare flesh. You know, who wants that? And what else things do I do to help out my neighbor? I don't speak. I don't smile. I don't look at anyone or smile or do anything. I try to act as if I am on the run. I'll act real scared, like, oh, no, I'm kidding. You don't want to do that either. That bothers me because I saw Airport when I was too young to see it. My grandparents said, we're going to go to a triple feature. It's going to be Airport and Poseidon Adventure and Towering Inferno. They're all running, said, let's watch them back to back. And they took me to that. And on top of that, they said, eat all this nutmeg. And I said, okay. And then, I was traumatized. And so sometimes it's difficult for me to travel, but I do it. I do it anyway. And it's getting easier. The older it gets, easier as you get older, because you don't care about life as much. And you say, well, you know, what am I really afraid of? Maybe it's a blessing. Who knows? What's it so pretty from up here? If this is the last thing I see, that's fine. I thought about that, about the lights flying at night, looking down. I thought, gosh, this is so beautiful. What a nice view. I should be terrified, you know, but I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm in a state of fear paralysis, like a deer or something. And it's given me a moment to, I'm looking at like their headlights, except their streetlights seen from very far away. As the plane was taking off, I didn't think it was high enough at first. I thought, come on. I have this feeling it's not going to go. I don't, you know, floor it. Shouldn't you be flooring it? I think that too. You might be moving too slow. This doesn't feel fast enough. I thought that about some of the planes I was in. I did a lot of commuter, just short flights to get to where I was going, which was Vermont. I just came back from there. Tell us all about Vermont, boring older person.
Well, we started our trip.
No, I went to Vermont because I was exploring entrances to the fifth dimension. I am trying to take you to other possible worlds. Listen, tomorrow I am going to be on a show. You're going to be able to tune in to a very special place. To a place that doesn't really exist. It exists between things. Between possible worlds, where nothing is definitively happening. It's just floating possibilities, and you'll see what you expect to see. So, I don't know. Mess with your expectations, and you might have a really crazy experience. And that's very exciting to me. To be surprised is difficult sometimes. We think we know what we're going to see. We know what we're going to hear. We know what the next thing out of someone's mouth is going to
be.
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 Be. We know it's going to be. Be. Bees come out of people's mouths, don't they? It is no coincidence that the Hebrew word be and for bzz and for words are very close. Devorah, Deborah, something like that. Devorah, Deborah, Deborah. They call all bees Deborah. That's so funny. And bee, we say Aunt Bee. In Hebrew, it'd be Aunt Deborah, I think. I'm not sure. I'm not a linguist. Look, I'm outside of my Ken. Ken's my friend who knows everything. He's not here. Ken's outside, and you're outside of your Ken. There's some things I know, and there's some things I don't know, and there's some things I think I know. And it's the things I think I know that I don't know, that you don't know that I don't know that I think I know. Oh, what do you know? What do you know, friend? What do you know? What do you know, friend? I don't know, and you don't know, and we don't know that we don't know. No, nope. That was the theme I took an epistemology class in musical theater, and that was one of the things we sang. We would sing that every morning. I'll never forget it, and I'll never remember it again because it was improvised. Something I'll never forget is all the things that I've done where I've felt embarrassed or cast out or things that made me fear my acceptance by others. Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could put those away, if we knew that our feelings of love and acceptance were not contingent on something. Oh, I wish I could just float. You know when they, do you ever sit through a guided meditation? They'll go, you know, relax. You are heavy. And you are breathing deeply. You're going to breathe in. And you're going to, are you waiting for permission to exhale? Because what if I don't give you permission to exhale? And you forget to do it. So exhale anytime you would like. That makes you feel relaxed. And you're floating. And there's no responsibilities. And your boss called and you said, don't have to go into work tomorrow. Or ever. But you're not going to starve and die. Oh, what would that be like? So that's not possible because I know that my neighbors and humanity don't care whether I live or die. And that would necessitate them caring about me. And that can't be. Oh, you caught us. Relax anyway. Relax. Imagine not being at the mercy of others' fears, and you're just going to inhale and going to again exhale whenever you want and inhale whenever you want. I'm not going to tell you when to breathe or who to breathe in or what to breathe in. But I would like to give you an opportunity to come with me, accompany me, at this show tomorrow. Because first of all, I have been using radio in this radio station to try to undermine evil forces. Yes, I say evil. I'm going to call it what it is. What? What do you say is evil? I don't know. Evil forces. I don't know what I know it. I know it when I see it. So it keeps changing. Nothing's consistent. These things that are constructive one day or destructive the next. It's a matter of staying alert. It's a matter of constantly refreshing yourself, a matter of clearing everything out, clearing your eyes so you can see fresh again, forgetting what you just did so you can re-remember other stuff. Just remember, not re-remember. Just remember. That's all there is, right? Remember, remember, re-remember. Anti-re-remembering is one. I would like to be your guide, to not necessarily relax, but to be confused, that feeling of being on your heels a little bit, like, oh, I feel perpetually unsettled. I feel like a cask that's being turned, rolled on its shine by a drayman without losing much of its perpendicular. And I stole that from somewhere. I think Thomas Hardy, but I'm not sure. But that's us, all about to tip over. Oh, yes, we are. I'd like to keep you confused. And I'd like to bring you into that confusion and say it's nearly magical that you will be able to access other worlds, that the things that you think can't possibly be changed can be changed in an instant, that your cynicism is correct because you've failed to see the secret button, the magic button. Where's the button located? That's just the thing. Its non-existence makes it hard to see. But there's other ways of not seeing than simply not being able to see a thing. So, there's different ways of, just like there's different types of infinity, there's different types of non-existing. If existing was a gradation, or, you know, was a continuum, if existence was a continuum the way time would, or in other dimensions, up and down, so in some things that kind of are and kind of aren't, kind of there, they're kind of not. Maybe sometimes they are there, sometimes they aren't there. Maybe my very being is like that. Maybe Hardy White is sometimes there and not there. Maybe Hardy White might exist in other possibilities. Imagine that you listen to me on the radio just once. You're driving through New York City or Jersey City or something like that, and you have the radio tuned. And I come in, and I'm saying some of my nonsense, and you hear it. Who's this fella? He says his name is Hardy White. Sounds like a loaf of bread. Loaf of bread, and I say something, and it resonates with you, or at least you remember it, triggers something. You drive away. You never think of me again until you have a dream. And in the dream, you remember my name, and you assign to me some sort of character that's a composite of other things in your life that I have nothing to do with, no access to, can't control this, can't come in and write lines for your Hardy White. Your Hardy White exists only in your world. Now, take it to the next level. This one right now exists only in you. Right now, even when you quote me, I exist only in your world. Oh. So the dream me, the me you hear now, everything about it is inside of you. What you gonna do with it? Oh, I'm easy to accommodate. You might even forget I'm there for a long time. We enter one another's mind palaces. We drift in and out all the time. We are ghosts in one another's mind palaces. What rooms evoke us? What things? What sentences, what histories summon us back and into focus? Boom, there we are again. And I can see you standing by the pool table shooting pool saying, do you want to shoot some pool like we did back in the days when we were in college and we used to go to that pool hall place? And one day that pool hall place shut down because early in the morning two fellas wandered in there and one of them cut the other's head off with a pocket knife. And so they had to clean the place up. And all, it was a mess. And we said, wow, that's some humanity. That didn't even happen in the pool hall when you'd expect it to, which is like in where people are fighting and drinking. No, didn't even have to be a pool hall. That act of horror might have taken place anywhere. So if I said a guy cut someone's head off in a pool hall, you picture it happening in the midst of some fight or something like that, not in the early hours and not only happening there because the door happened to be open. I put two and two together and I made a thing, Hardy. I created a scenario. I made a story, even though stories are lies. Will I come to you to the other dimension? Will I fly with you to the Tokyo Supper Club, an imaginary place that exists between worlds? Everything is in between, all in between something. In between, in my world, is normal. We're all in between, so between disappears. And we're comfortable with things not being one thing or another. Nothing is one thing or another. No name is the name for that thing all the time. Oh, come with me. You got your tickets? There's actually literal tickets because we're raising money for the radio station to which on which you are listening to right this minute. It's amazing. We say through the magic of radio, but it's not magic. Through the science of radio, is it science? I'll tell you what it is. From the shared illusion of radio. Imagine that. SES per Kepi. SES listenissini. To be is to be perceived to be perceived. You are listening to this. And it is creating, and you're creating a reality with you. Let me tell you a story. This is something that happened to me one time when I was younger than I am now. I was, how old was I? I was probably about 2 years old, and I had a dry goods business. And you say, that doesn't seem possible. I hadn't yet inherited it. It was my grandfather's dry good business, but he would take me there with him and say, I want you to sit here on this bag of flour. And don't get into trouble. But I was a two-year-old, so what I would do is I would roll around the flour and I'd get it all over me, and so I looked like a ghost child. One day a customer came in, and they wanted to buy a lot of beans. They said, we want to buy up all of your beans. Now, the real story was this was a competitor from the other side of town, and they were going to try to corner the bean market. The next thing you know, they saw me covered with all that flour, walking around on the floor, and they thought it was a ghost baby. And they screamed, they said, there's ghost babies, haunted with ghost babies. And they dropped all the beans. And then as they tried to run and get away, they started to trip on the beans. And I heard little tiny bongos playing like that. And I thought, where's that coming from? And I turned my head, and it's actual ghost babies. It's not me, covered in flour. I thought they were afraid of me. But it really was ghost children. And they were playing tiny little drums, little bongos. They had a little thing going like that. And they're yelling, Babaloo, because they'd seen too much I Love Lucy. Because that was the only thing to do in the store, was watch the television. And if you're a lost and lonely child that's been forgotten, you float in and out of the spaces where you once ran and hid. And now, as mere mist, you watch the same television shows and get joy from them, though you have no physical form. Oh, ghost baby of the dry goods store that scared the bean stealers. I understand your plight, and I ask you to come with me. I'm giving you all invitations. How am I going to evaluate you? Would you make a good... What would you do in this new world? We're offering you a place in it. And what would you contribute?
Nothing.
That's fine. Really, it's just I don't even mean the question. Whatever you want to do is fine. You'll find a way to do stuff. I think nobody really wants to be worthless, right? So you'll find things to do. You'll entertain yourself. Oh, it's going to be... Come with us. Come with us to the crazy new world. You can come right back. That's the good thing about going between possible worlds. You can come back immediately. You know, you get your ticket. You say, is it a one-way ticket or a two-way ticket? There's no one-way tickets. It's an all-way ticket. You can be there anytime you want. Once you get the ticket, you go there. You can come back. You can go there as many times as you want. Infinitely. You mean you can keep rewatching the show? No, it's gone after you see it the once. That's what you're paying for, right? And then it'll disappear. It's an experience. It's a moment. It's a little bit of time. And will we ever get it back again? You're buying a seed. It will implant itself in your brain. And it will grow there as if it were a watermelon seed in your brain, which is something we used to do as kids. You cut a little hole in your head and you shove a watermelon seed down in there, and your brain matter is actually the perfect medium for growing, especially vines like that. And the watermelon, after a couple of weeks, you'd start getting watermelon vines coming out of your ears and out of just growing around your eyes, out of your nostrils and everything. And they'd grow down like hair. And if you let them grow, you'd get melons. You'd have watermelons hanging from you and everything. And they're growing out of your brain, so you can kind of think you know what the watermelon's experiencing. So you're not, you know, encouraging people to rip them off and eat them, because they're kind of connected to you when you think about that. I thought about that when I grew hand fruit, hand peaches. Hand peaches, another stone fruit, poured forth from my fingertips at one point in a thought experiment I was doing. These are thought experiments. I should point that out. A lot of times I will apply for grants and I will forget to indicate that I'm doing a thought experiment and not a real experiment. Because they'll be like, what's the budget for this? I go, oh, it's very nothing really. I mean, I'm going to use the money largely to eat. Because that's how I keep my brain powered that way. And for other stuff. But all pretty much brain oriented. But I don't need any, you know, other things than that. I don't need any large hadron collider or anything like that. I don't need lasers to do my experimentations. And at the end of the day, whether it proves anything or not is immaterial, because the experiment's immaterial, so it's consistent. I've contributed a lot to immateriality. And I don't mind. It's irrelevant in the best way. Just irrelevant doesn't mean useless. You know, if you say, our astronauts are trapped in space. Anybody got anything? And I recite a poem and they go, that's irrelevant. And I go, yes, but it's not useless. The poem itself has intrinsic worth. It probably has, who knows what kind of worth. It's just not the answer for your question. Doesn't mean it's nonsense. It means it's nonsense in context, in this context. So I know a lot of people turn to this show and say, I tune into Hardee's where I get my hard news. I get my hard news. I get life advice. It's all there. And how's it there? It's there by being not there. It's conspicuously absent. That's like when you read the book of Esther. When you read the book of Esther in the Bible, you go, where's the word God? It's conspicuously absent. So if you have a character like that in a story, and its absence screams something, then you know that maybe it's everywhere. Maybe that's what the story's about. Maybe it's not a character in the story because it's what the story is about. You said that twice. If you say something twice, it sounds profound. You know why? Because people on the second time, they go, I've heard that. I think I've heard that before. If a character in a story is conspicuously absent, maybe the story is about them. And then you say it again, they go, that sounds very familiar. Now that you say it, I've heard that for a while now. And it's true. So, and they don't, no one differentiates the fact that they heard it from you seconds before. Because time, it's relative stuff. Our inclination a lot of times when we hear things like that is to make a pun. Say we said relative, so now I'm going to start talking about my uncle. And that's fine. And what that's a result of is that there's no place left to think to. Where are we going to think this to? Nowhere. Let's change directions completely. Let's make it into something else. It's no good anymore. There's no wheels on this car. It's now a playroom. It's now something to stand on. Oh, I've taken the wheels off a radio show. You're off the rails, that's for sure. Oh, rails are, how restrictive is that? trains. You got to go where the train goes. And then if you want to go somewhere else, you got to take some other transportation. I'll skip that. Maybe I can get some direct flight. Rails. I'm free. I'm freer than any plane. Even a plane is too much. They fly in directly there. Like I said, they make you sit on the runway, both directions. They go wheels up, wheels down. Irrelevant. So wheels up, wheels down, it's 40 minutes. So what you're saying, it's 4 hours then. Because I know that you're going to make me do other stuff. That's just the time in the air. That's nothing. I'm going to fly there without the plane then. Maybe I'll just fly there mentally. That would save us all some trouble. You know? I like that the air person is there for your safety now, they say. Giving up on, please, don't ask them to do anything. Now they're just there to keep you barely alive. Another thing. Oh, I know you're loving my... I would love your... No one's ever done airplane flying observations. I know. It's classic stuff. It's like doing standards. It's like, man, you're a regular Shelley Berman. Thank you. So you think that hurts. Doesn't hurt. No, I won't go on. I heard a flight attendant finally admit that it's hard to tell if a seat is actually reclining if somebody is in it who is very large. Because then the seat goes back even if it's not technically reclining. And I learned that too, as having somebody whose circulation was cut off for an hour. But, you know, again, would going somewhere in my mind be adequate? Let's say you paid me. Say, I'm paying Hardy, come speak to my religious group. All right, that's great. Did you make sure to stipulate he'll literally be there? Because otherwise he'll say, oh, I imagined I was there. Where's my money? No, I don't know. I thought that was assumed. Oh, no, with him you got to say, I need you to be what we all agree is physically here. Otherwise he'll just like close his eyes and then tell you about this experience he had where he was floating above you guys. Yeah, don't do that. Make him commit. But this is a great thing because tomorrow... I don't have to be there. In fact, I'm not even going to be in reality. I'm going to be so far into another world. You'll say, I don't even know what's going on. I don't know. Is this entertainment? What am I watching? Well, you want to know what you're watching? You don't want that. You want to be... Confusion is a type of entertainment. Being disoriented. So there's a lot of ways to be. Funhouse might be the lowest brow... way to entertain somebody is just spin them around and make them dizzy. So we might be doing what is the most basic type of entertainment and engagement tomorrow. Oh, it's going to be exciting. Also because I get to see you. And we are sort of a community, aren't we? We know one another sometimes just through the radio station. We know maybe other listeners through the comments. We have a kind of interesting relationship that takes place in a completely other world. And that's fantastic. Oh, we're going to do radio in another dimension. And you're going to be there. And you say, I was there. Were you or did you watch online? No. See, it seemed to the whole world that I was watching online, but I was there. I swear to you, I was there. Something strange happened, and I felt like I was there. That there was a place, that the performers weren't in that place either. It was some third place. It wasn't where the performers were. It isn't where the audience were. It's a third place that we all are. And I can't even describe it to you. And we're going there. We're going to go there tomorrow. You need a lot of souls to do this. It's like you're pulling a big stone towards the pyramid. And we need not a lot of bodies, but a lot of souls. And we're going to do it with our mental energy. And there's nothing mystical about it. It's just good old-fashioned making it. You made it up. That's it. And what I contend is that the made up and the not made up are very similar. Very similar, and they share the same infinity. They're just like different sets, but they're the same thing. They have the same background. Oh, are you excited? I'm excited. Why? I'm going to let you join me now while I prepare myself mentally for the show by doing various meditative exercises. Because, you know, when you go between possible worlds, you can't hit on one thing. The minute you decide a thing, you're flung into that world. So you have to stay in a constant state of ambi, bothness, and neitherness. And how do I do that? Well, I try not to finish my thoughts. I try to meander. I try to wander. I try to randomize my own thinking. And that way it shoots me off into directions that can't be planned. If I'm constantly surprised or disoriented, I might stumble into somewhere that I least expect. And there I might see something or feel something. There's a state. Do you ever walk around in a state that maybe I get it when I'm about to make something or I'm about to appear, and suddenly everything I hear seems like some kind of weird. It's just like being paranoid, but it's really happening. So, for instance, you'll go, like, I know you'll go around saying, like, okay, so it's a Tokyo Supper Club. That's the name of this sacred space that I'm creating for the show. Now, as the show nears, I have heard the word outside of the context of my show, Supper Club, several times from separate, disparate places, unrelated. And I'm positive I haven't heard it that much before. And you say, well, no, you're hearing it because you're looking for it. Really, though? Maybe yes, maybe no. Really hard to prove. You know, we notice patterns. And you're saying, oh, no, you only notice patterns when you're looking for patterns of subconscious lit up. But I know that's not true. Because sometimes I notice patterns that are out of nowhere and they're real. So they could have an objective reality. As I near this event, the whole world could be knowing more about it, conspiring to be in on it with me. Maybe that's proof that it's all happening in my mind. Maybe yours is overlapping. Wouldn't that be wonderful? What if we were each creatures that represented an entire universe, an entire world, each one of us, like the ambassador to a completely different reality? That's us, and it's in us, and we bring these universes to one another when we meet. Woo! I have some acquaintances whose universe is a lot of it's dark matter. But then there's others like, you know, it's a lot in there. So we're all, it's a different, who knows? And is it your choice? I don't even know that. Now, I'd like y'all to clap your hearts together now. How do you do that? It won't make any noise. But smash your heart into others' hearts in your head. I'm in there. Let me get out. I'm a little worm. I'm going to get out. The heart worm. And again, it's benevolent and figurative, and it's not real, and it's not going to hurt anybody. And I don't want to hurt anyone. I don't want to hurt their sensibilities, their feelings. I don't want to cause any kind of destruction. I think there are other teams that are hard at work at that. I don't want to interfere with their work. There are wonderful destructive forces in the universe. They do a fantastic job. And they don't need help. So I'm going to not do their work for them. I am on Team Builder. So I'm going to make stuff that gets knocked down. I don't mind doing that. I build in mediums that are very temporary. They're very easy to knock down. Sometimes I knock it down myself. I make sand castles. I make silly sand castles. I make air sand castles. I make castles of light. I make castles of thought. They're not even castles. They're buildings. They're huts. What are they? Mountains, trees of light. Things that go up. Don't know. Can't see them. They're invisible. How can they be light if you can't see them? Because they're surrounded by darkness. Since they aren't darkness, they're something else. There's something else. There is space between the darkness. That's what it is. Look at my face. Oh, I look at you, my friend. I say, we can do this together. We can lift up our hearts. We can fly away from the pain that we inflict on one another and on ourselves. Come to me to another place, another space, another planet, another world. Fly with me. Walk with me if flying makes you queasy. Dive, dive down, swim with me if swimming makes you feel easy. Come with me any way you want. You can take your own car, my car, or the bus. You can take the plane. You can transport yourself there. You can write a little essay, and you're the main character. And in the essay, you're already there, so you don't have to travel. You're a native. What am I listening to? What's on the radio? Anything I imagine, that's not what I mean. I mean, who is this person talking? And why are they saying what they are? I don't know. Do you mean Hardy White? Yes, I think I mean Hardy White. Where'd he come from? He's made of light. No, he's not. He's made of what? I don't know. He's made of what? That's exactly right. I don't mean to go all Abbott and Costello with you, but he's actually made of question. I'm made of question. I'm all balled together, question. How can question be a substance? Question isn't. How can energy and matter be the same thing? How can question and answer be the same thing, all wrapped up? But they are. Oh, and my heart's in there, and I'm in your heart. We are nesting doll hearts. Our hearts are embedded in one another infinitely. You are the outer heart, and you are the innermost heart at the same time. We all contain each other. We are so lucky. I'm so glad you're with me. I hope you do join me tomorrow. Get your tickets. You can go to the WFMU homepage for the Hellraiser stuff, and you will see my silly face, and click upon my silly face, and then you get this ticket to what's going to be a mind circus, and then you go to the mind circus and say, I'll never forget that. And that's not a value judgment. That's just prove me wrong. Oh, my friends, thank you so much for joining me. I am indeed Hardy White, and this is WFMU, East Orange, WMFU, Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and New York City, New York. That seems impossible. And online at WFMU.org, worldwide, which also seems impossible. I want to thank you so much for joining me, and please join me again next week. Thank you.
name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. Twins' 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 name was Ebony.
Thank you. truth about it. He was sleeping with someone.